Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we're going to, tonight we have an interview coming up later with Donna Conroy. And she's a lobbyist, director of a lobbying firm for, it's called brightfutures.com. And they lobby for jobs.
That's kind of a novelty, don't you think?
Yeah,
it's kind of a nice thing. She's a very knowledgeable person and right on it. So I feel secure having a person like that lobbying for jobs because she's very knowledgeable and she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And she's interested and active in having people get jobs and not have jobs go out of the country.
Yeah.
She's very concerned about jobs that have been outsourced, and that's one of her main things that she talks about. So I think you'll find the interview informative.
Yeah, we covered almost everything last night.
Yeah, just about on our show.
I was very surprised.
Yeah, we had an opportunity. Actually, yeah, we did.
Yeah, I was very surprised.
And we had last night we had
had
a lot of articles and a lot of news in our FM show. And usually what we do is we usually have a lot of articles and left over, and we read those on this show, but we don't have so many, so we're going to go into a site here to see if we can get something current. Of course, everybody's very concerned about Obama's State of the Union.
Yeah.
I can't say that I'm that concerned and thrilled about what's coming up because I don't see that he's going to have very much to say.
It's going to be a big bullshit job because he's got nothing to talk about other than
he hasn't really succeeded at anything.
Freeze spending. I mean,
he's going to freeze spending on everything, but spending on war. So you know,
makes
great.
Absolutely no sense.
Doesn't make any sense
none
to me
whatsoever. This is an interesting article. It says this. We read some of this last night, but it was really important because the developments have come up with Haiti. About Haiti's oil, gold, and iridium resources explains the post-earthquake occupation and invasion. And
oil, gold, and mineral resources.
Let me just go into the old article.
Okay, here we have it.
Okay, this explains the invasion. So let's talk about this. This is from Red Ice Creations.
Let's see what kind of article this is.
Haiti oil reserves are larger than Venezuela. Haiti also has huge resources of gold and minerals like iridium.
I'm not sure what iridium is, to tell you the truth, and why it's valuable.
Well, this is the same similar article to what we read the other night, but it's probably important to read.
Scientists Danielle and Jeanette Mithrin indicate that under Haitian soil is rich in oil and fuel fossil, which were collected by Haitian and foreign experts. We have identified 20 sites, oil launches. David Mithrin states that 5 of them are considered very important by practitioners and policies. It's a very poorly written article because I think it was written maybe in French and then translated.
That's what it was, yeah. This article, this one was translated from Spanish, but Haiti has huge oil resources of gold and other minerals. Former president of Dominican Petroleum Refinery, Leopoldo Espaulaf Nanita, considered one of the solutions of the Haitian state to pay its debt, foreign debt, and solve social economic issues that overwhelms Haitian found in deposits of gold and other minerals that owns the territory of a neighboring country.
Nanita revealed that according to geological studies and research conducted on Haitian soil, indicating that the nation shares with the Dominican Republic gold deposits, untapped, the world's largest and a little known and rare mineral that is vital for building of space and other appliances, extraterrestrial iridium. These two resources are sufficient to alleviate the poor reality of those born in Haiti. The architect also claimed that these resources are poorly understood because of a multinational conspiracy that aims to extract their natural wealth of the Haitians, especially those derived from minerals that abound in the neighboring state.
Well, Rifid Zuma's former president. Oh, that's the name of that company.
Yeah.
Up here,
yeah.
Dominican Petroleum Refinery. Former president said that this group of firms and individuals in state are dedicated to fostering poverty in Haiti, suggesting that the Dominican Republic serves as a crutch to the centuries-old misery and marginality living the vast majority of our neighbors.
In this regard, supported the pronouncements of the newly appointed Prime Minister of Haiti, Jean-Max Bellerive, on the search for new alternatives that will facilitate job creation and attracting foreign investors to the smallest of the two who share the island of Hispaniola, instead of charges only to the Dominican nation. Espaillat admitted that in Haiti there is a national class comprising politicians and intellectuals, mainly belonging to the Bellerive, concerned that Haiti's problems are resolved in its territory and not elsewhere, such as its neighboring island. So what they're saying is, in the past, the Dominican Republic has been the only part of the island of Hispaniola that has really benefited from anything. Haiti has been like the poor stepsister. That's how I see that. These articles are quite difficult to read because they're either translated from either French or Spanish and poorly done. Not that I would do any better. I have to confess I'm not very good at languages.
I wouldn't want to try to translate anything. I have enough trouble with English. Employers not told to post effort for advertisement for reliable workers because it discriminates against unreliable applicants.
How about that? When it comes to hiring staff, there are plenty of legal pitfalls employers need to watch out for these days. So recruitment agency boss Nicole Mamo was especially careful to ensure her advertisement for hospital workers did not offend on grounds of race, age, or sexual orientation. However, she hadn't reckoned on discriminating against a whole different section of the community, the completely useless. Oh, my God.
Excuse me, that's funny.
Okay, go down here.
When
she ran the ad past the job center, she was told she couldn't ask for reliable and hardworking applicants because it could be offensive to unreliable people.
Oh, God.
In my 15 years in recruitment, I haven't heard anything so ridiculous, Mrs. Mamo said yesterday. If the matter wasn't so serious, I'd be laughing out loud. LOL. Unfortunately, it's extremely alarming. I need people who are hardworking and reliable. And I'm pleased to discriminate in that way. If they're not, then I really can't use them. The reputation of my business is on the line. Even the woman on the job center agreed it was ridiculous, but explained it was the policy because they could get sued for being discriminatory against unreliable people.
We want unreliable people.
She told me they had lots of problems with people taking them to court for advertisements stating something like, would suit school leaver. I'm not sure what that means. It's an English expression.
Yeah.
Mrs. Mamo, 48, of Boreham Wood,
Hertfordshire,
runs Devonwood Recruitment, which supplies hundreds of cleaners, caterers, and porters to hospitals across the country. She filed the advertisement for a £5.80 an hour domestic cleaner at the hospital in Bury St. Edmunds, Suffolk, through the Job Center Plus online service last Thursday. However, when she rang the nearest branch in Thetford, Norfolk, to make sure details would be available to job seekers who turned up in person, she was transferred to a woman who said the wording was unacceptable. Mrs. Mamo, a divorced mother of two, added, I had to battle to have must speak English, which they also said was discriminatory. In the end, I had to write, must speak English due to health and safety reasons because they're dealing with hazardous materials. Diktat was widely criticized yesterday. A spokesman for the campaign against political correctness said, this is absolutely ridiculous. Of course people want reliable workers and employers should be able to ask for them. they can't advertise for what they want, then the system is broken.
I got a cartoon over here where two people are looking at a job vacancy. It says, suit anybody vaguely human.
It's not perfect, but at least no one can accuse us of discrimination,
they
say. So that goes on a little bit.
But this is in England, so it gets kind of silly, but you might want to, it's funny. And let's see, we're going to go to, drivers will leave more than one pay and distant ticket to the customer window.
Israel imposes financial punishments on Palestinian prisoners. Israeli prison staff impose the financial punishments on Palestinian prisoners. The human rights organization has claimed that the Israeli prison staff are imposing financial punishments on his Palestinian prisoners. In a statement, the Prisoners Center for Studies said that the guard and administrations in Israeli prisons force Palestinian detainees to pay for the water and electricity that they consume as a form of additional punishment. According to the center, prisoners are also fined for trivial reasons, such as reading the Quran or praying during the prisoner's daily roll call, if officers enter when it's time for prayer. If the imam, while giving the Friday sermon, utters a word that the guards don't like, when a prisoner doesn't manage to get out of the bathroom in the time specified by the guards, for other similar reasons, when the guards abuse their positions and use any excuse to penalize prisoners. The center's director, Rafat Himoduna, claims that prison administrators withdraw the funds from prisoners' personal bank accounts without informing prisoners. If anyone doesn't have a bank account, the administrator imposes a future fine against his name, provoking the prisoner even further. Mr. Himoduna called upon human rights and humanitarian organizations to intervene to stop this unreasonable behavior. The Israelis treat prisoners like tenants and force them to pay for water, electricity, food, and accommodation, he added.
Okay. That's enough of that one. Let's see. Oh, this is good. UN troops pepper spray starving Haitians. Thousands of
Hungry.
I know that. Wait a minute. I'm just getting to the article.
It's right there. Thousands of hungry Haitians.
Will you let me read it?
Okay, well, you're too slow.
Thousands of hungry Haitians spilled into the streets, defeating barbed wire and a tiny contingent of blue-helmeted UN peacekeepers distributing food. The chaotic scene unfolded outside the presidential palace in Port-au-Prince, where the agency struggled to control 4,000-strong masses of desperate Haitians 2 weeks after the devastating earthquake struck. Security forces fired pepper spray into the air in an effort to disperse the thousands of men and women and children jostling for food. I probably could understand that, but as the overwhelmed soldiers finally retreated, people rushed forward to grab sacks of pinto beans and rice emblazoned with the U.S. flag. A vomiting pregnant woman gesturing at her mouth to show hunger was carried off by U.N. troops after collapse out of the crush of bodies. Soldiers had done their best to prepare for the crowds. They erected barbed wire, cut off the street from the sprawling tent city. And troops then ordered people to line up in four quicks. I don't know what that means to you.
Where is
four
that?
Four quicks. Q-U-E-Q-E-S. Quicks. Okay, 20 yards from where the food was to be dumped. Probably means four abroad. Whatever, four abreast.
Queues.
What is
queues? A queue is a line.
Line up in four.
Four queues.
Oh, in four queues.
Troops then ordered people to line up in four queues. Those
right,
are lines.
Those are lines. Okay, I didn't know that.
You queue up.
Queue up.
Yeah, you queue up, line up.
Oh, it's queued up was when you queue up, it's like you're playing pool or playing...
No, queue up.
Or sharpening up or queue up.
No.
I don't know.
Well, obviously, you haven't had...
It's not a word I would ever use in a sentence, quite personally, unless I was a British writer or something. The escapade came 2 days after similar scenes in the Point Rouge
area,
when Brazilian UN peacekeepers were forced to fire flash grenades and pepper spray to dissipate an unruly crowd. Due to insufficient strength of military personnel providing security in the site of the distribution, the population tried to loot, putting the lives of the military personnel and the World Food Program members in danger, according to an internal Brazilian UN report. They got pictures of this crowd. It's unbelievable.
Mm.
Poor people. Poor, horrible people, man. Like, and with thousands left without food after the melee, President René Préval called for more tents of the homeless who are spread across empty lots, parks, and plazas on the hundreds of thousands in the surrounding Champs-de-Mars Plaza. Haitians were
living out in the open, many with nothing more than a plastic sheet to protect
Lila's,
them.
Lila's, on your the way you like to pronounce these things perfectly.
Champs-de-Mars
Plaza. And Haitians were living out in the open, many with nothing more than plastic sheet to protect them from sun and rain. We live like dogs, said Espigal Amilcar, 34. We're sleeping, eating, and going to the bathroom in the same place.
Oh, dear.
The global agency supplying tents said it already had 10,000 stored in Haiti. At least 30,000 more would be arriving.
Why aren't they distributing it?
Well, see, there's a big sign with one of these kids. Well, stop corruption. We want good distribution. I'm sure there's a hell of a lot of corruption going on in the black market, too, with all this aid. But the International Organization for Migration said the supply is unlikely to address the extensive shelter needs. Meanwhile, as Haiti mobile phone system began working again, thousands of voicemails and texts from people trapped in the ruins were heard and seen for
the
first time. Oh, my God, huh? Survivor Renee Emile, 32, cried when she read the text from her husband Peter, who was going on a train course in the capital when the building was in collapse. He wrote, "Send help. We are still alive. May the God bless you and keep you. His face shines upon you. I love you." And Mrs. Emile told the son, "This is all I have left of my husband. Some words on a cell phone screen. This is all there is. And it arrived too late."
Oh, my God. Oh, those poor people. Oh, that's so sad. Imagine getting a phone message from...
Yeah. This is mailonline.com. Very sad. Very sad. And, let's see. TV and trauma-based programming. Oh, that's interesting.
In our previous article, we discussed how sex... Sex magic is used in the media by the Illuminati to influence the masses through television. We also pointed out that television and the media are controlled by the military ruling class, who is Satanists that worship the forces of chaos. In other words, our modern media is nothing more or less than military psyop. We also explained the basic principle of the behavioral psychology, including classical and operant conditioning. In operant conditioning, the subject is either rewarded or punishing for choosing a specific behavior. In television, music, and movies, the reward is emotional participation in the simulated sex act. The payoff is replaced with a message to the Illuminati's choosing. Today we'll discuss how punishment is meted out to mold public opinion into political and social submission.
In Illuminati mind programming, punishment or severe trauma is used to force a target to disassociate or create an alter personality. Disassociation is literally a separation of self from trauma, and the mind will isolate the trauma with an amnesia wall to separate it from a person's consciousness. Behind this amnesia wall is not only the memory of the trauma, but also the segment of photographic memory, which can be programmed according to the desire of the trainer who inflicted the trauma.
Everyone disassociates from the present. We call this daydreaming. Psychologists point out that those with borderline personality disorder do so as a result of severe trauma in their childhood. One common finding, and the source of much of the controversy on this matter, is that disassociation is correlated with childhood mistreatment. Numerous studies have presented evidence in support of this idea. For instance, Watson, Chilton, Fairchild, and Wilwell found that individuals diagnosed with BPD,
bipolar disorder.
Who disassociate regularly report greater levels of childhood emotional and physical abuse as well as emotional neglect. Childhood sexual abuse, however, did not predict levels of disassociation in individuals with bipolar disorder. Van den Bush, Verhuell, Langland, and Van den Brink found that disassociation scores for women with bipolar disorder were high among those who reported both sexual and physical abuse prior to age 16, more than one predator, and severe maternal dysfunction. Brodsky, Clutter, and Dulitt found that women with bipolar disorder who disassociate are more likely to report a history of childhood abuse than are women with bipolar disorder who do not disassociate.
In George Orwell's 1984, he wrote of doublespeak, which is the ability of a simple phrase to convey two messages. It also involves the ability to accept contradicting evidence as truth. Doublespeak can also be defined as two sets of laws, one for the sheeple and one for the elite. In order to accept doublespeak, the target has to be able to disassociate. Disassociation can be correlated to tension or negative energy as well. There is compelling evidence that individuals with bipolar disorder disassociate more often in proportion to the amount of tension they experience. In a study in which aversive tension was defined as a vague state of unidentified negative emotions, these found that in 2001 the duration and intensity of aversive tension was positively correlated with the experience of both some somatic and cognitive disassociative symptoms.
In other words, those in a negative environment with high stress levels would disassociate more frequently to avoid the tension. The Illuminati prize this ability to disassociate in their offspring, as it makes it easier to program the individual for specific tasks. So what about the general population in television? Does it hurt us individually and collectively to be exposed to a constant barrage of emotional and mental trauma? Disassociation causes the individual to sever ties with pain. The consequence also involves a separation for other human emotions. Too much trauma and disassociation, and we all sever ties with our humanity and our conscience. We become psychopaths and sociopaths that will not respond to guilt or shame because we have literally lost our ability to feel.
The emotional trauma inflicted by viewing portrayed trauma on television can have the same impact as if we ourselves are witnessing the actual trauma. We disassociate and cut ties of our emotional self to avoid the mental anguish and pain. You know, this is true because I can't watch that, like CSI or...
Oh, I don't like
or
those
I
shows.
Can't, I have to break away from CSI or House. I hate House. And, you know, they got all these weird and crazy diseases and these murder things and...
Oh, I don't like those.
I like
solving what's wrong. I don't mind that, but I don't like the other stuff.
Like CSI, man, is really a sick.
No, I don't watch those things.
And any of these hospital doctor shows and
I don't
people,
like some of those
all
either.
These crazy people. This serves the political purpose of the global military ruling class because it desensitizes us to the horror of war. When gross injustices, genocide, or other acts of brutal violence are presented to us, we simply separate ourselves from our emotional self and go off into fantasy land. We fail to experience moral outrage because we have been conditioned to separate ourselves from the voice of conscience.
Since we have lost the ability to feel, we become addicted to an increasingly greater portrayals of slaughter and bloodshed. We develop a bloodlust, as it were, longing for real experience. We turn to those things that make us feel something, as opposed to feeling nothing at all. This leads to even greater depredations. Our society becomes more violent and aggressive, more militarized, more easily manipulated by those that control our emotional experiences.
That's why people watch, extreme fighting and WWF, you know, the World Wrestling Federation, and people getting bashed over the heads.
It's not healthy.
Boxing and just blood sports and
to lose one's humanity is the greatest indignity of all. To become callous to the suffering of others, the greatest commendation of life of a life not lived well. If we are to survive as a society, that is what we should really be fighting to retain, individually and collectively. It really is that simple.
And, I totally, fully agree. And that's what's happening. And that's from deadmanmusings.com. And, let's see. Go back to that. Just 1 second. There's something I didn't see. He's on Blog Talk Radio somewhere.
Hmm.
That's cool. I have to check him out.
Paul A. Drockton, M.A.
Yeah, I have to get on that. Check him out. Dead Man Musings. And Stalin's complicity in Operation Barbarossa.
Barbarossa.
Stalin's in action, desperate foreknowledge of Operation Barbarossa, Hitler's 1941 invasion of Russia, is one of the great mysteries of World War II. Like the improbable Dunkirk, where Hitler allowed the evacuation of 330,000 Allied soldiers, the explanation lies in the collusion of the wartime leaders. The Illuminati, Hitler, Churchill, FDR, and Stalin. The Illuminati bankers manufacture war to advance a satanic world government agenda. The wartime leaders belonged to the Illuminati order and were chosen to impose another catastrophe upon the human race. Their incongruous behavior was designed to prolong the war. According to author David Murphy, Stalin had precise intelligence regarding Barbarossa, yet
rejected it and refused to permit his military to take necessary actions to respond, lest they provoke the Germans.
Right. So this is kind of interesting because these guys were all in it. Let's go on to something else.
Greek cops caught on video posing as anarchists. That's an interesting thing.
Yeah, I think you have to be you have to see it. Secretary of Defense for Blackwater, U.S. military working for Afghan drug lords.
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has been briefed by the Palestinian military.
No, the Pakistani.
Military high command that they are being overwhelmed by highly trained and extremely well-armed militants in the border regions and terrorists operating across the border, the country. We have been told at the highest sources that Blackwater XE and other U.S.-based mercenary groups have been actively attacking police. And military and intelligence organizations in Pakistan as part of the operation under employment of the government of India and their allies in Afghanistan, the drug lords whose followers make up the key component of the Afghan army. Didn't you freaking know it? I'm downloading this.
Are you ready to do your interview?
That's what happens today again.
We should be ready to have our interview. It's about a half hour.
We can't take the it's not downloading. So anyway, that's the news for today. And we got our sexed up in Amazonian danger too. Israel calls UN Gaza report anti-Semitic. Oh, Jesus. I got to read this. The UN report in Israel's 22-day offensive against Hamas-controlled Gaza is anti-Semitic. An Israeli government minister said, as the Jewish states prepared to formally respond to the allegations of war crimes. The Goldstone report, the similar reports are similar, a type of anti-Semitism.
Simply a type of anti-Semitism, diaspora, an information minister, Yuli Edelstein, told the Ynet news agency ahead of a trip to New York where he will present Israel's rebuttal on Thursday. How ridiculous.
What a joke. You're an anti-Semite. Yeah, right. Oh, man. Yeah, they're murdering. They're murdering and genociding the entire population of Palestine, and anybody who talks out against them is an anti-Semite.
No matter what they do,
they're not even Semites. These bastards. These guys are from Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
The only Semites there are Palestinians.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, what the hell? I mean, why you want to hijack a goddamn area and hijack a religion and hijack? I mean, these guys aren't even Jewish, you know. It's unbelievable.
So why don't you get on the interview? Put that on, because that's going to take about a half hour, and you want to have be complete.
Interesting news.
There's all kinds of stuff.
I'm going to recommend a very good site, davidicke.com. Usually has a tremendous amount of good information on this and updates regularly. So I highly suggest you go there. davidicke.com. Yeah, we're going to go back, and we're going to play our interview with Donna Conroy.
I think it's timely because she's talking about jobs, and hopefully that's what Obama's going to address at his State of the Union, but who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Donna Conroy.
FutureJobs.com, and a most needed website, too.
Not just the website.
Mm-hmm.
She's
a lobbyist, which is a great thing, because we certainly need somebody to advocate for American jobs. And we're going to find out a little more about her. I don't know anything really about her background, but I think she comes out of the tech industry, that she's been involved with the tech industry, because, of course, that's where we began to lose American jobs. From the beginning, and that is kind of spread out to other industries. If you can remember that in the tech industry, they started hiring talented workforce from abroad, saying that American workers weren't qualified, and we can ask more about that. Good evening, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you.
I forgot to mention, this is my co-host, Lila.
My name is Lila, so I'm glad you're here with us. We're glad that there are people working out there for jobs in America, because it's something that we really need. And one of the things that, of course, I wanted to ask you is, what is the H-1B, L-1 Visa Fraud and Abuse Act, and why do we need this?
Well, why we need it is because corporations have actually designed these programs to bypass local talent for U.S. job openings and actually displace Americans with these corporate visa programs. So that's why we need it. And let me explain what the H-1B visa allows.
Okay.
It actually allows corporations to recruit abroad and hire a citizen from another country to fill a U.S. job opening.
Now, do I understand that citizen who's hired from abroad, do I understand this correctly, would be paid at the rate he was paid abroad and not on an American standard?
No, the H-1B requires the American standard, what they call prevailing wage.
Okay.
However, the L-1 corporate visa does allow corporations to pay their visa staff on those visas their normal wage from their home country.
Okay.
Is that only if we outsource the jobs, or is that if they bring those jobs into this country, how can those people survive on the wages that they're getting in China or something, you know?
Well, that's a good question. The heart of this is Americans need to understand that there are H-1B only want ads all over the internet. Corporations under this program can recruit abroad and hire a foreign worker to fill a U.S. job opening with these programs.
That would only be a foreign worker that would be hired? I'm looking at a list that was on your website, and it says no American citizens or green card holders need apply. And in the state of Connecticut, where we are, it's 104,400 jobs.
Right. That's been over several years. Let me back up just a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this whole issue is a secret that the technology PR people don't want Americans to know. And that is that an H-1B worker may be hired even when a qualified U.S. worker wants the job, and a U.S. worker can be displaced from the job in favor of the foreign worker. This quote that I'm reading you actually comes from the Department of Labor's strategic plan for 2006 and 2011. This is the secret that technology lobbyists don't want us to know, and that is that they can bypass us for top-dollar white-collar jobs. And because they can bypass us, they've actually been able to use these programs to outsource top-dollar white-collar jobs. Now, what I mean by outsource is these jobs stay in the U.S. economy, but they are rubber-banded to, say, India via these corporate visa programs. If a company in India, or I should say the company in India, actually requires their workers to be on site here in the United States. So you have a rubber band pulled from the United States to India, and it's wrapped by these corporate visa programs. If the company can't deliver the goods, those jobs in India rubber band back to the United States.
I don't know if I follow that. Rubber band, you mean they snap back here?
Right, they snap back.
They come back here, they come back to the United States.
Right, exactly. This is an assault on white-collar jobs or white-collar professionals. It's similar to the assault on blue-collar workers.
Mm-hmm.
But in the instance of blue-collar workers, companies actually shift the factory. In white-collar outsourcing, the factory stays here, but the jobs rubber band, you know, for a period of time.
All right, here's the question I have, okay, that might explain it, but I don't know. Right now it's tax time, okay, tax season is up there, you're getting your W-2s and all that kind of stuff. All right, now last year there was a big scandal, a big thing about our taxes being done in India. Okay, and all of these taxes that would be done by accountants in this country, all right, like the H&R Blocks or any of these other companies, are outsourcing this work to India. All right, now is that part of the? I mean,
of what you're talking about?
Part of what you're talking about, or what?
Yes, it is. But let me explain. It's not like a factory where you can outsource these jobs to India. They are rubber banded by these corporate visa programs. They need their staff here in the United States in those tax companies in order to temporarily locate those jobs in India.
Mm-hmm.
When these corporate visa programs are reformed, those jobs will snap back to the United States.
Good. So do you have a lot of people on board to support this legislation? That Durbin
and
do you have a majority of people on board to support Senator Durbin's and Grassley's legislation?
Yes, we have good news. Senator Durbin's legislation to reform these programs is included in the comprehensive immigration reform bill that was just introduced.
Okay, good.
But you know, nobody has seen that yet. I mean, have you reviewed that at all?
I've reviewed parts that apply to the outsourcing of jobs, the bypass of local talent, and the segregation that now is rampant in the IT industry and engineering too.
Segregation? What do you mean?
Well, remember corporations.
You mean racial segregation, or what are you talking about? National segregation?
Right, visa segregation. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Some of these corporations who use this program heavily actually have more than half of their staff on these corporate visas.
Oh,
wow.
Remember, it's legal corporations to never consider U.S. talent for their U.S. job openings with these programs.
Why was this legal? Why was it made legal? I mean, who made it legal?
The IT industry and their lobbyists.
And who passed these bills?
These bills were passed in 1990.
Wow.
So it's been going on for 20 years. As a result, what's occurred is that we have a tremendous oversupply of science and technical professionals, experienced talent, who don't have jobs. And in addition, we're bypassing our new college grads, who we have paid so dearly to educate.
And who have paid so dearly to be educated. I mean, so many of these guys are in hock up to their eyeballs.
You know, the part that I don't like is the part where there's so much negativity about the American worker and the American worker's production, and you hear all that on the mainstream media all the time. They're always downing the American worker and American college graduates, you know, like they don't know anything, and American schools, in order to support these programs.
Exactly. They use that as a cover to hide the secret that they know, which is that they don't have to consider us. And Bright Future Jobs, we actually exposed that secret, and we brought these H-1B only want ads to Senator Durbin,
mm-hmm.
and he responded with an excellent bill. This bill is going to force corporations to recruit locally first. It's going to stop the outsourcing of American jobs, again, that rubber band,
mm-hmm.
And it's going to force these companies that have more than half of their staff on visas to be cut off from the program. So all of these provisions are in the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Package. However, there's a little caveat, and this is where your listeners can really play a role. We've got to let our senators and our congressmen know that there is a tremendous oversupply of technical talent, and we need to develop U.S. policies that address this oversupply. Frankly, we've got a question, which is, now that we have tech talent,
mm-hmm.
what are we going to do with it?
Yeah.
Well, that's all well and good, but I think the fact that it's buried in this comprehensive immigration bill, all right, I have a funny feeling it's going to get lobbied out, you know, of there or negotiated out of there, because the last immigration bill that thank God was defeated, all right, was horrendous. All right, and this one I can't believe is going to be much better. All right, but maybe if this jobs bill is in there, but I mean, look what they did to the health care bill. Look what they've done to every bill. They've shredded it. Okay, and you know, the Senate bill goes to the House bill goes to the Senate. And by the time you got it, I mean, nobody knows what the hell's in it, and it's 10,000 pages long.
So I guess your work is just beginning. You got to stay on top of it.
Yeah. Well, how sure are we? How sure are you that this thing will even get even past the committee?
Well, I'm not sure at all about the future, but what I do know is that these provisions are in there.
Yeah.
We've got to fight to keep them in,
yeah.
And we've got to make sure that our senators and congressmen know that not only do they have to reform these programs, but they have to address the technology corporations' CEOs' mentality that Americans can't cut it in science and technology. We have too many science and technology talent and new grads that are chasing too few jobs openings.
Well, it's time that we got some we've got to develop some innovation and some creativity in green technology and green future, and put those bright minds to work on alternative stuff.
I completely agree.
Yeah, because I think we have very bright minds in this country, and America has had a strong economy in the past. It can have a strong economy in the future if we concentrate on here.
We have to bring back our industry.
That's right.
And without our industry, we got nothing, okay? And now they're taking away our tech jobs as well. So it's like, there's only one thing to do, and that's to ban these H-1 visas and ban these people from the country,
well,
from the workforce, because we can't. I mean, if you're looking at 12, 13, 18% unemployment in this country right now, all right, and that's only the people that are still collecting unemployment. Those who aren't, okay, aren't even on the rolls, so we're probably around 25%, all right? And if that's the case, and these tech companies are still bringing in people from out of the country, not hiring people, not even putting the job postings up in the, I mean, isn't this tantamount to treason? Isn't this tantamount to criminality?
Helping destroy our own country.
Yeah. Isn't this criminal?
You know what? No nation can remain strong when its citizens cannot even compete for job openings in their own country.
Sure. I mean, what are we trying to do here? I mean, this is insane. I have to tell you, one of the sickest things I saw in the last couple of years was this big promotion for China. You know, Sunday, you know, and I attended a lecture that made me sick a couple of years ago, and it was this clown who was trying to promote China as the number one economy and putting us back in second and third place, all right, and asking everybody to promote China and help China become the strongest economy in the world. Why the hell would we want to do that? I mean, I was about ready to throw an apple at this guy. You know what I mean? It was the most stupid speech I'd ever heard from anybody.
Especially since it was given to American citizens in America.
I can see he's prepping up Chinese, but I mean, he's talking to Americans here, all right? And he's trying to convince Americans to be, a second rate, third rate, fourth rate country, okay, and give all of our wealth and our help and our aid and our brain trust to China. I mean, this is the kind of insanity, okay, that is out there. This is the kind of traitorism. This is the kind of treachery, okay, by our intellectual elite, if you will, and our corporate elite, okay, that are trying to manipulate the American people, all right?
Through the media.
Through the media and through their own positions and through their corporations and whatever, and their own power. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the guy should be drawn and quartered for being that kind of a traitor to the country. You know what I mean? But yet, hey, you know, that's where everything's going these days. Right?
I agree. There's this new breed of CEO that is, instead of innovating technology and products, they're innovating domestic federal laws to bypass town.
Hey, hold on one second. I have to just turn the tape.
And create jobs and give us a chance to compete for these jobs.
Absolutely.
We've got the talent and the know-how to pull us out of this recession depression.
And, you know, what makes these people think that they're so darn bright? Let's face it, you pay somebody one-third or one-quarter of what you pay an American citizen, of course your company's going to look like it's run by creative, smart, brilliant people.
Until it goes bankrupt. And it needs to be bailed out by us. Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that doesn't show brightness and creativity in my mind.
I agree. Right, exactly. They're, as I said, they're innovating and creating new laws to erect barriers to the U.S. workforce in an age when we need to be participating in this digital age.
Right. Oh, I agree with you 100%. Now, I hope you can accomplish it. That would be great. And I think one of the best ways, too, is if you can get the media to be more positive about our own people.
But that's not the way they are. They're supposed to be negative.
Yep,
they're supposed to tell you you're a piece of garbage. They're supposed to let you think you're a piece of garbage, so that it lessens your ambition. It lessens your hope. Okay, so that they can allow these imported laborers to come in. They can allow that.
It must be very frustrating to be a tech graduate right now in that field. It must be disheartening.
Things. I really support your point that we need to bust the myths that Americans can't do science and technology.
Right.
One of the myths that these technology corporations are fond of repeating is they actually actually blame American children, fourth and eighth graders, as a cover to hide the their legal bypass and remember displacement too of American technical talent. Now your listeners can actually bust this myth. Last year, International Science and Testing reports came out. Students in Massachusetts and Minnesota actually were on par or outperformed their Asian counterparts in Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong. So the idea that our American children are falling behind is a myth that they use to cover up their bypass of U.S. talent.
And also to make Americans feel disheartened early on, like they can't compete, to dissuade them from trying.
Well, I mean, actually, it really doesn't.
Oh, good.
Because young people want to go into these fields.
They're excited.
So it might depress it somewhat, but because the technology industry there's a lot of mergers and acquisitions going on, which creates fewer and fewer jobs. They're outsourcing jobs, and they're bypassing us for the job openings here. That all those factors combined still create an overabundance of technical talent. So, you know, discrimination always creates an oversupply of talent, and it also always drives down wages.
Yeah.
I want to let your listeners know that these job openings are not for $30,000, $40,000, or $50,000. Most of these job openings are between $65,000 and, say, $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
So these are top dollar white jobs. I suspect if we pulled out the teacher job openings, the average wage would probably be about $90,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I noticed something on your website. There was an article about
hold on one second here. I don't know quite what's wrong. I'm sorry for this. Excuse me for one second. Excuse me, I'm working on a technical difficulty here, folks. I apologize. Hopefully this will work. 10,000 pages long.
So I guess your work is just beginning. You're going to stay right on top of it.
How sure are we? How sure are you that this thing will even get even past the committee?
Well, I'm not sure at all about the future, but what I do know is that these provisions are in there.
Yeah.
We've got to fight to keep them in,
yeah.
And we've got to make sure that our senators and congressmen know that not only do they have to reform these programs, but they have to address the technology corporation's CEO's mentality that Americans can't cut it in science and technology. We have too many science and technology talent and new grads that are chasing too few jobs openings.
Well, it's time that we got some we've got to develop some innovation and some creativity in green technology and green future, and put those bright minds to work on alternative stuff.
I completely agree.
And because I think we have very bright minds in this country, and America has had a strong economy in the past. It can have a strong economy in the future if we concentrate on here.
But we have to bring back our industry.
That's right.
Without our industry, we got nothing, okay? And now they're taking away our tech jobs as well. So it's like, there's only one thing to do, and that's to ban these H-1 visas and ban these people from the country, from the workforce, because if you're looking at 12, 13, 18% unemployment in this country right now, all right, and that's only the people that are still collecting unemployment.
Sorry, I just realized that I had I was playing the wrong side of this. So hopefully I can get this thing to work again. Hold on.
In Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong. So the idea that our American children are falling behind is a myth that they use to cover up their bypass of U.S. talent.
And also to make Americans feel disheartened early on, like they can't compete, to dissuade them from trying.
Well, actually, it really doesn't.
Oh, good.
Because young people want to go into these fields.
They're exciting.
So, it might depress it somewhat, but because the technology industry is there's a lot of mergers and acquisitions going on, which creates fewer and fewer jobs. They're outsourcing jobs, and they're bypassing us for the job openings here.
We have one more minute remaining to the show before it stops streaming, and I'd like to, you can dial in 646-915-9505 and listen to the remainder of the interview. Again, that's 646-915-9505. I recommend that you call now, or you can pick up the remainder of the show on the archives.
Openings are not for $30,000, $40,000, or $50,000. Most of these job openings are between $65,000 and, say, $150,000. So these are top-dollar, white-collar jobs. I suspect if we pulled out the teacher job openings, the average wage would probably be about $90,000.
I noticed something on your website. There was an article about recruiting foreign teachers.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Can you explain that to us?
Yes, absolutely. The American Federation of Teachers exposed the exploitation of Filipino teachers by Filipino labor contractors. And this is very similar to what Indian body shops do to Indian tech workers. They'll load them up in a guest worker house. They're not paid all the time. They're unemployed often, maybe about half the time that they actually stay here. and the companies don't pay them if they can't place them on a client site. Now, that's actually against the H-1B law. These people are supposed to be paid every month.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the ways that the body shops exploit Indian tech workers,
and this isn't even seen by anybody. I mean, it's brought up by any law enforcement.
What happens if the person loses their job? Then are they sent home, or
are they stuck?
Under the current H-1B law, these corporations are required to fly the person home on the company's dime.
Oh.
But, of course, they don't do that. So they just fire them and, you know, leave them to their, you know, their own means, which, of course, is...
But if they have a legitimate visa, okay, an H-1 visa, all right, isn't that, and they go to the immigration department and they say, "Hey, look, I just got canned from this job, okay? And they're trying to screw me all over the place, and I don't have enough money to get back to India, and I got nothing. I can't do anything. Can you prosecute this company for being
not upholding their end of the bargain?
That's right, for human trafficking, basically. You know, that's about what it amounts to."
Right, exactly. Yes, you can, but it means that the H-1B, you know, visa worker would have to hire a lawyer. It's not as easy as you would think.
But even in that case, I mean, if he's under a temporary visa, he's got to go back, right, if he doesn't have a job.
Well, no. This is a corporate visa.
Yeah.
The visa doesn't belong to the foreign worker.
Oh, okay.
Right, that's really important. This is a corporate program.
So it really is human trafficking, basically.
What's that?
I mean, it's human trafficking by the corporations. I mean, they're getting all these corporate visas, and they're picking up all these guys from India, sending them over here, not paying them, or paying them, you know, piddly, and then leaving them high and dry.
Exactly.
I mean, they're doing that to prostitutes from Russia, for crying out loud. I mean, that's the same. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I mean, why isn't the immigration department prosecuting?
Because it's legal.
actually, again, the corporation is supposed to fly them home with corporate money.
But they don't.
They don't, right. However, I do have some good news.
Oh, good.
The USCIS, the Department of Labor, and the Department of Justice are actually on the case about this exploitation of foreign workers.
They're on the case.
They're
on the case. Yeah, okay.
There's been a 180-degree change between Bush and the Obama administration. So this is very... however, these changes affect only the foreign worker.
Mm-hmm.
They protect the foreign worker. But our laws need to be changed. That's where we come in, U.S. We need to make sure that these corporations have to recruit locally. We have to keep those provisions in. They're going to be forced to post the job opening on the Department of Labor website.
Mm-hmm.
So, and these corporations will not be able to displace Americans through these visa staff. And those are all things that will take care of the problems on the American worker side. It's the regulation and the enforcement of labor laws that's going to take care of, you know, the exploitation of particularly Indian IT workers.
Who's working on this now? I mean, is anything really coming through at all on this?
There's been, like I said, major changes. The DOL and the USCIS have put lots of energy and talent
into using every type of regulation that they can to stop this exploitation. The Department of Justice actually filed a criminal charges against an Indian body shop last year, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
So there is movement. However, there's still the technology companies. They want to be able to bypass local talent, and if they can't use it with these H-1B and L-1 visa programs, they want to redesign the green card process so that they can more easily bypass U.S. talent. So we're not out of the woods. We need all your listeners to call their senators and congressmen and say, look, we've got an oversupply of talent. Let's figure out what to do with these folks, and let's close any loopholes that the technology companies want to create in the next year or two to bypass the talent that we so dearly paid for to educate.
Now, people can keep up with what's going on by going to your brightfuturejobs.com, and they'll keep abreast of these things that you're doing and what's happening with that legislation.
Absolutely.
Good.
Right.
And
brightfuturesjobs.com.
Okay.
Brightfuturejobs with an S.com.
And we really appreciate, Donna, what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think you're doing excellent work, and thank you so much. We need people like you out there to make sure that Americans get a chance to have jobs in their own country.
Oh, yeah. Are there other organizations that are lobbying for jobs for Americans or trying to fight this thing, or I mean, that are associated with you, or?
AFL-CIO just came out with a large paper analysis of these programs. The information that I provided some of the viewers is in their 50-page report about gaming the system.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the unions are on our side.
I've got one question, because I know we're out of time, and there was this one question I had that I pulled up from your website, and it bothered me. Was saying that the blue states and blue cities were being trapped more so, were being affected more so by this than red cities and red states.
Right, because blue states have many more white-collar jobs.
Oh, I see.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
In other words, these are jobs in teaching, engineering, technology, accounting, marketing,
New York City,
human resources.
Yeah.
Those are the jobs that they can recruit abroad and fill. So,
okay.
Right, in other words.
Okay, I understand that part now.
Yeah, we were a little confused on that. We want to thank you very much, Donna, and
yeah.
I hope you come back on our show and let us know what progress you're making.
Yeah.
I'd love to. And just to let folks know, we actually are the only organization that is dealing exclusively with the outsourcing of top-dollar white-collar jobs. So we have a unique position in the political arena.
Who is funding your lobby? Who's funding these efforts?
Our members. We're a volunteer group, and we ask for donations. We're willing. We've got.
Do any of the unions or anybody else? who cares, Lila? Lila's pointing at the time. But
we have a commercial.
But what I was saying is what do they? You made me lose my train of thought here. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
If the unions were supporting and were funding us?
Yeah, I was wondering who was helping you out? What organizations, unions, anybody else helping you in any way?
No, like I said, you know, our members, we have some strong volunteers. But no, we don't get any help from the unions. Of course, you know, we talk to the unions about this issue. But we'd love to develop stronger partnerships with the unions because essentially a worker issue.
Absolutely. Well, we really appreciate your time and coming on and explaining this to people, and we're going to make sure people understand that they can help you out in some ways, financially or otherwise, by going to brightfutures.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you,
and I'd love to speak with you in the future.
Very good.
Thank you, Donna.
Thanks.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
And that's that was our interview with Donna Conroy from brightfutures.jobs, brightfuturejobs.com. And you can check that out and see what they can see what they're doing. And I was quite fascinated by their by them and by their work and how they had a lot to say. And our country is being sold down the drain by these high-tech companies who aren't hiring Americans. It's just unbelievable what's happening out there. And the traitors to this country, the traitors are these corporate CEOs and these politicians who are allowing this kind of exporting or importing of foreign workers for to the detriment of American workers, especially in the high tech jobs. It's really a sick situation and something that has to be looked at and remedied. And I don't know. I don't think. Based on what I've seen in this economy, and with not only this economy, but this idiot that we have for a president, is, I don't think it's going to be any better than it was under Bush. And it also still happens that this H-1 visa mess happened under George Bush Sr., his administration. So there we go. So I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you learned something. And tune in tomorrow night when we go into the fourth dimension I'm not sure what we'll be talking about tomorrow night, but it will be on a spiritual level, and it will be philosophical and metaphysical, and I'm even thinking of re-titling the Thursday night program as Gateway to the Fourth Dimension. So thanks for listening, and hope you tune in tomorrow.